All right, welcome to Moedon Ivri, Club Hebrew, the summer edition continues, and we are on 1 Samuel chapter 27, so we're getting near the end of the book, as you guys can see, and then we'll probably go on to something a little different, either some poetry or something. I've had some suggestions for doing something a little different when we're done with this, so we may do that for a while before we go back to narrative. All right, chapter 27, then, if you will remember, 26, David has escaped from Saul, and they had that whole exchange about why Saul even after David, and Saul, you know, kind of relented and went back to his home, but David still isn't sure of Saul's motive and what's going to happen. So we pick it up in 27 verse 1. Again, feel free, for those of you guys who may not have been here before, to ask questions about any part of the text. So I'll read it and then translate. Vayomer David elabo, ata esafayom echad beyad Shaul. Then David said, literally to his heart, but to himself, see, or thought to himself. Sometimes amar doesn't mean just to speak out loud, but also to think, as you will see. So I think it's here. David thought to himself, now I will be swept away, or I will be destroyed. This is a niphal from Safa, okay? First common singular imperfect. Now, atah, I will be destroyed one day, beyad Shaul, by the hand of Saul. Alright? Ein li tov ki himalait, el eretz pelishtim, v'noash mimeni Shaul levak sheni, od bekol gevul Yisrael, ben nimlat, ve nimlat ti miyado. Alright. There is not to me good. Okay? Or it is not good to me, or maybe even more smoother. It's not good for me. But that, I mean, that's kind of how you have to translate. But that I should escape quickly. Okay, notice what you have here. Most translations will make it a comparative. There's nothing better for me to do than to get away quickly, to escape quickly. Okay, but literally, ein li tov, it's not good for me. See, or there is nothing good for me, but that himalate imalate. Notice that it's both of these are from the root malat. What kind of form is the first one? Himalate.
Niphal infinitive absolute.
Good. A niphal infinitive absolute followed by a niphal imperfect. So here you have the absolute form followed by the finite form. And remember, the absolute form of function maybe as an adverbial here, okay? There's nothing better for me that I should escape quickly. All right? To Eretz, the land of the Philistines. V'noash mimeni, and he will despair of me. The noash is a niphal from the root ya'ash. It's a rare root, and it means to despair. I don't think it occurs in the call. Just a few times. So Saul will despair, maybe, I don't know if despair is the best word, Saul will get tired of Levak Sheni, seeking me. Levak Sheni, notice, is an infinitive. What's the conjugation of Levak Sheni? Anyone see it? Levak Sheni, it's a little odd. It's a PL infinitive. The dagesh is not in the kaf, because there are certain Hebrew letters that the dagesh won't appear. And here you have that. It's frequently, kaf is one of those. All right. And Saul will despair of me. And notice you have to add the verbs. Saul will despair of seeking me still in all the region, Gevul, of Israel. Okay, ve nimlati, and I will escape. Notice again from malat, and nifal perfect, va plus perfect, and I will escape from his hand. All right. So again, the last part of the verse, and Saul will despair of seeking me. See, notice it's almost, the mimeni is almost redundant here because you have the suffix at the end. Saul will despair of seeking me still in the land, in all the region of Israel, and I will escape from his hand. All right. Any questions through verse 1 about any? It's kind of a mouthful. You'll see some very interesting constructions in this chapter, by the way. All right. And remember, as we've said all along, Samuel does not always have standard Hebrew form, style, syntax. It's not quite as smooth as reading Genesis or Ruth or something like that, as you know. We've seen that before. So it's going to be a little rough kind of going from Hebrew to English sometimes, as you saw in this phrase, Ain, Li, Tov, Ki, Immolate, Immolate.
Do we have any exegetical reason for that?
We don't know the history of the manuscript. My answer is that it is more colloquial Hebrew. And so you see kind of more dialectical forms and syntactical forms. And again, colloquial versus kind of the standard Hebrew. Below it there are spoken forms. Just like our written English is kind of different than how we speak it. And notice even amongst English-speaking groups or subgroups of people who speak English very differently, pronounce it very differently, different syntax, different words, kind of all those kinds of things. And so there are some linguists who would make the case that you have that here. You can especially see it in all the dialogue, you know, where sometimes it seems like in dialogue is where you get the more strange stuff, as you would expect, spoken versus a more formal written language. But again, we don't know the history of the manuscript either, so some of it could be due to that. Okay, verse 2. Vayakum David, Vayavor, who the Shesh Meod Ish Asher Imo. Then David rose from Kum, and he crossed over, namely he crossed over the border, see. He passed over Vayavor, he and Shesh Meod, he and 600 men. Again, notice, very common with Ish, you don't get the plural, you get the singular. We've seen that throughout Samuel. He and 600 men who, Asher, were with him. All right. To Achish, that's the name of a man, to Achish ben Maok, to Achish son of Maok, Melech Gath, the king of Gath. All right, so notice he went to the city of Gath, which was in Philistia. All right. I don't think there's anything too hard about that verse. Any questions? Good. Verse 3. Vayeshev David im Achish begat, hu va'anashav ish uveto. And David dwelt. Notice this is from Yashav. It means to sit or to dwell. So David dwelled with Achish in Gath. He and his men, each one, ish, and beto, and his house. So namely, they took their families with them. Okay? David, ushte nashav Achinoam ha-Yisraelit va-Avigail eshet Nava ha-Karmelit. Okay. David and his two wives. Notice that the word two is construct. And again, this is kind of normal Hebrew as we've seen. And you would just translate it in conjunction with nashav. So, and David and his two wives, Achinoam, the Jezreelite, and Abigail, whom you guys are more familiar with from previous chapters, the wife of Nabal, remember Fool, with a capital F, the Carmelite. All right, good. Notice the Gentilics, the Jezreelite, and the Carmelite. In Hebrew, it's that eat or E ending. So here you have the feminine Gentilic with the Tav at the end. Eat, eat. If it was masculine, the Tav wouldn't be there. Okay, does that make sense? On Jezreelite and Carmelite. Okay, any questions? Yes?
Do we get the impression that the men's families were with them before, like at this time? Like, or that they had to go get them?
Oh, yeah, we really don't know. It doesn't mention this. This is the first. I think what it means is, remember, we've seen David kind of on the run before, and you can maybe suspect that they had to leave their families a lot of the time. So here, they're more settled. It's making a comment that they actually went to Philistia not just for a little while, but they were there, and they brought their families. And you'll see how long they were there in a few verses here, actually. They were there over a year. All right. So we're on verse 4 now. Va'yugad la'Sha'ul ki barach David gat. And it was told to Saul. What's the root of you God? Nagad, yeah. Nagad, right? And it was told to Saul that David Barach had fled Gath. Had fled to Gath. Again, no preposition. Very common. Okay. Below, notice this If you look at this form, Velo Yasaf Od Levak Sho. What's the root of this strange form, Velo Yasaf? Notice how I'm pronouncing it. Anyone?
Yasaf.
Okay, good. It's Yasaf, and it means to add. Here you have a great example of the Korei Kativ readings. Notice the consonants. Okay, with the Yasaf. The consonants, if you take away the vowels, will want you to read it as the more customary Hifil form, Yosef. All right? But the Masoretes are saying, no, read it as a call perfect. See, so if you'll see out in the margin there, Korei, so you don't read it as Yosef, you read it as Yasaf. So that they're kind of saying there's another reading without the vav there. And that's the one they prefer. But they didn't change this manuscript that they were working with. So it's again more woodenly, and he did not add again to seek him. Okay? He did not add again to seek him. But remember how Yasaf or Yosef functions? You would make the very often followed by the infinitive. So what do you do? How do we make good sense out of this in English? Remember? You make the infinitive the finite form and translate Yosef or Yasaf adverbially. And he did not seek him again. See, or yet again. Remember, very often, I mean, we've seen this, it's Yosef plus that word ode plus the infinitive. And so we just simply say he did not seek him ever again. I don't think ever. Maybe that's just not. I don't know what's going to happen next. But he did not seek him anymore or something like that. All right? We've seen that before, right? Where Saul stopped seeking him for a while. Any questions on verse 4? All right. Verse 5. Vayomer David el Akish, im na matzati chen ba'eneka, yitnu li makom ba'achat are hasadeh ba'eshva sham. Then David said to Akish, now what's the function of the na?
Politeness.
Politeness, yeah. So notice he's being deferential because he's the king he's talking to and he's got to make this request. So he's making this real polite request. Okay? So it would be something like, if you please, you know. So something like, if please I have found favor in your eyes. Or, if it may be that I found favor. I don't know, how would you express that in English, the deferential part? We have to play with that a little. I have found favor in your eyes. Yitni, may they give to me. All right. Notice here in Hebrew when you have an impersonal subject, very frequently it's the third plural, you know, they. And in English, it's more customary to translate, may there be given to me. Or see, may a place in one of the cities of the field be given to me. But notice in, kind of if you translate strictly wooden, may they give to me a place in one of the cities of the field. Okay, so in other words, one of the small towns. Away from Gath. Gath probably being the booming metropolis of Philistia. And he's saying, just give me one of those little ones out there. So he's asking for a city. Kind of interesting. Okay. And Eshva, notice what's the root of Eshva? Common?
Yashav.
And notice it's a cohortative. And let me dwell there. So, may they give to me a place in one of the cities of the field, one of the outlying cities, and may I dwell there, or let me dwell there. Okay? Velama yeshev av dekabair ha mamlaka imak. For why should your servant dwell, yeshev, see again, call, imperfect. For why should your servant dwell in the city of the kingdom? Probably in the royal city. See, notice how the genitive functions as an adverb to modify city, so or as an adjective. So why should your servant dwell in the royal city, Imak, with you? Makes good sense.
So he's not asking for a city like to control it, just a place to live.
I guess so, yeah. But maybe, because you'll see what happens. I don't know. Verse 6, here you'll find out.
What's the dot in the sham there?
Over the aqueduct.
Oh,
because I've
probably
seen that before,
right,
where the first letter, non-begotten,
right,
letter has.
Okay, well, yeah, what you're looking at is the Dagesh, probably the what's called the Dagesh Diramens. In other words, certain, remember in Hebrew you have this phenomenon called sandhi, S-A-H-N-D-I, is that right? In which words are more connected than in English, right? And you have this like with the genitive construction, the construct construction, and so the pronunciation of a word, depending on its relationship and the kind of word it is the previous, can be affected. And so the Dagesh probably is because of the word that precedes it. And so it's kind of telling you how to pronounce it in a certain way. And now I'm not sure if you're a good scribe or Masoret, you probably know the difference between the pronunciations, and I do not know what that is.
So then you'd count the final syllable of the preceding word as closed with a shin?
Something like that, right. So it would be more closed, and then, yeah, there's more of a separation there. But I don't know why here, and maybe not other places or not, but that's what you're kind of seeing. Notice the Masoretes have made note of this. This occurs. The Eshva following Sham doesn't occur in any other place. Notice that's what the Lamed means. That's Aramaic for there is no other. In the right-hand margin, you see that little Lamed there. So they're kind of telling you that these two words in combination doesn't occur anywhere else, only here. Okay. Same thing with the Lama Yeshev.
That's amazing they did all that without
amazing
computers.
Just amazing. I know. When you think about it, it's pretty darn incredible. I mean, they must have just been doing nothing but reading the text all day. I don't know how they did it. Yeah. I mean, you can see, yeah. So you don't see the phenomenon. I mean, the Masoretic text isn't until starts after the 6th century, but a lot of people think, you know, the material is kind of in their heads and this tradition developed. But again, no one really knows. Kind of interesting. Yeah, any other questions? That was good. Yeah.
David here is talking to a foreign king, right?
Right.
A Philistine
Correct.
King. Would their language have been close enough for they
exactly
to understand?
See, that's another good point. We've seen this throughout where in Canaanite you had the different dialects and languages overlapped enough so that there was the ability to understand each other. There was probably a prestige language that was the spoken language amongst people. In America, we have a little more trouble understanding that, but if you go to a country like in Africa or somewhere like that where neighboring tribes have different abilities to understand each other. You know, sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. And that's what you have here. It's really interesting.
Indonesia.
I mean, there's all kinds of phenomena. I was talking to a guy that's taking Arabic, who was taking Arabic, and he said that, you know, the language he was learning was totally different than the spoken language. He was learning the religious language and more formal language. So the registers were totally different. You know, again, that's hard for us to understand because it works differently. Although, if you go, you know, you think you know English, and then if you go to England, it takes you a while to go, what did he say? I mean, I don't know.
We
could
all
problem.
Probably understand the King James English.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Verse 6. Vayitin lo Akish bayom hahu et Ziklag. Lakein hayata Ziklag lemalakei Yehuda ad hayom hazeh. So Achish gave to him on that day, or at that time, Ziklag. That's the name of it. And if you look on your map, you'll find Ziklag. In fact, I have the map. You can kind of get your bearings here. Ziklag is, notice it's south and west of, it's still in Philistine territory. Okay. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah until this day. That's interesting. See, so Ben, you were talking about, did he control it? He lived there well? I don't know. It's more than that. It was his. So evidently he gave it to him. That's a rich king and give away a city. All right. Verse 7. Vayahi mispar ha-yamim asher yashav David bisde pelishtim yamim ve'ar ba'ah hadashim. Okay. And the mispar means number, and the number of days, the length of time which David dwelt in the land, the Sudeh, the region or area of the Philistines was Yamim and 40 Chadashim. Okay? A year and four Chadashim, a year and 4 months. So notice Yamim has the meaning not days, but year. And remember we had that same thing way back in 1 Samuel 1 when Hannah's family did the yearly sacrifice. Here, let me show you guys. You guys have a puzzled look on your face. Just look at 1 verse 3. And that man went up from his city, Mi-Yamim Yamima. Yeah, just look at verse 3 there. 1 Samuel 1, verse 3. And remember, we're talking about this guy. And notice 1, verse 3. And that man went up from his city, Mi-Yamim Yamima. See, very woodenly, from days to day, or from days to days, that's translated every year, from year to year. See, so you have that parallel here. So in other words, as far as we know, the family would make that trek annually to Shiloh to do their annual family sacrifice. So here, most translations have a year and 4 months. Alright? So again, you're seeing an expression that just seems odd to us. Okay. Verse 8. Vaya'al David v'anashah v'yifshitu el ha-geshuri v'ha-girzi v'ha-amaleki ki hena yoshvot ha'aretz asher me'olam bo'akashura v'ad eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, we'll probably have to stop here, but let me get through this. Now, David went up. What's the root of Ya'al?
Allah.
Good. Call imperfect vav consecutive. And David went up, and his men, David and his men went up, Vayif Shatu, and they raided, Hashat. In other contexts, means to strip off, but here, they raided, or made raids, El, against the Geshurims, the Geshurites. Notice here the masculine gentilix. Okay, the Geshurites and the Girzites and the Amalekites. Kihana, for they were Yoshvot dwelling in the land. Okay, for they were inhabiting the land. Alright? Now, I'm translating Olam as a place name. And you'll see why in a second, trying to make sense of this verse. Okay, so they were dwelling, Yoshvot, call feminine plural participle, in the land, which was from Olam, Boka, as you come to Shur, S-H-U-R. So Boak, again, is the infinitive. Okay, as you come to Shur, and up into the land, and to the land of Egypt. So in other words, these people were from Shur to Egypt. Now, I don't have a map for that. But where that is south, you know, is south and west of Judah. So if you have south and west and all the way extends to Egypt. So Shur, in other words, Shur is this region, here's the Mediterranean, so it's off the map here. So it'd be this region. Alright? So it's this region in which he was raiding. And that becomes important for the last part of the chapter because he tells Achish something different. Alright? Okay, does that make sense? So he raided these people. And we'll stop at verse 9. And continue there next week. All right? All right, good. Thanks very much.